Welcome to Unleash Your Courage. This is Angela Schroeder.
We're excited to have you with us, whether you're joining us live on Terps Up Radio or in the Facebook group. If you are in the Facebook group, make sure and leave us some comments and questions and tell us you're here. So, Corey, I'm excited to have you join me this week. Thanks for being on.
I am excited to be here. Thanks for having me, Angela.
Yeah. So I met Corey, I don't know how long ago, pretty recently. We're both on Dan's show occasionally right before this on Terps Up Radio. And then had a conversation and just love your energy. And I knew you'd be a great guest to have some great stories. So we're going to dive in and I'm going to let you just lead off with how you got here.
All right. Well, it's a pretty fascinating story. And professionally, it revolves around insurance. So it's going to be super exciting. I tease a lot. Right. Well, it actually kind of does start at a really young age with insurance. Oddly enough, both of my parents were in the insurance industry for a long time. And my dad was actually part of helping to write the first ever computer program for rating workers' compensation. My mom was a national account underwriter for workers' comp and a producer like I am now, and built up a large book of business and was unbelievably successful in the industry. And so I kind of was born into it. In fact, if you're a business owner out there, you know the term experience mod. And you probably learned what that was after you started your business and started having to pay a lot more money if you had a really high mod. Well, I knew what an experience mod was in seventh grade. So I'm not kidding. I was almost like engineered to be in this industry. And as I grew up around it, I was like, never will I go into insurance, like most kids who have parents that are in a similar industry. And fast forward to about 10 years old, I was in an airplane. We were going down to Disney World as a family. And, at that time, there was four of us going down to Disney World. I have a few more siblings that were born a little bit later on, but there was four of us going down and we had three seats together and one all by itself. Angela, I've been called a little bit of an extrovert in my day. And so we walked on the plane and my dad was like, well, of course I'll take the single seat. And I was like, no, dad, I got this. I'll take the single seat. And I proceeded to sit down next to a gentleman in a really nice three-piece suit and talked his ear off for the 3-hour flight down. I'm sure he had enough of me by the time we landed. But we had a very adult conversation, even though I was 10 years old. And at the end of the call or at the end of the intervention or meeting with him, he goes, hey, when you graduate college, give me a call and I'll give you your first job. Fast forward 8 years, graduated from the U of M. Actually, I hadn't even graduated yet. And I said, that guy told me he was going to give me a job. And I called him. We both laughed very, very hard. The rest is history. He was the president of an insurance agency at the time. And there began my insurance career. So, it's a very unique story as to how I got here. But it kind of makes a lot of sense with parents in the industry. So that's how I got into it all.
I love the story. You had told me that story before when you were 10, and it just goes so much to your spirit, like you said, of extrovert, sit down and have a conversation. That's not many 10-year-olds that would have done that and taken that opportunity and obviously made such an impression on him in the moment. And like really for all those years, remembered this guy.
Right.
Like it made an impression on you too.
Right. It absolutely did. And you know, it's interesting because I get this great job and it was really nice paying out of college and I was really proud of myself. And you fast forward another 2 years, I couldn't stand insurance. Couldn't stand it. Didn't like it at all. But there was one small part of it that just kept calling to me, and that was the workers' compensation arena. See, the GL, property, auto claims, that stuff. Honestly, it was a little bit boring for me at that time because I didn't quite fully understand it. It takes a long time to become an expert in anything. But workers' compensation was different because it was about the people, right? Workers' compensation protects employees when they get injured. It protects their families. It protects all the things that matter in life. Because if we didn't have that in place and you got hurt on the job and you couldn't work, how would you pay the bills, right? How would you send your kids to daycare? How would you pay for field trips, right? And so that one really reached out to me and I realized that there were some broken systems within the industry. I mean, some big broken systems that to this day are still broken. And I thought to myself, I know there's a better way to do this. I need to make a change. And so after 2 years at that first agency, I decided to go after an agency that had a bit of an experience or what you would say a niche, really driven around workers' compensation. And that's where I got really lucky in my career. You know, we always talk about working hard, but we never really give enough credit to where you just get lucky. And I got lucky because I went into an organization that had a gentleman who at the time was about 51 years old. He said words at my wedding. He became a second father figure. He was the smartest man I'd ever met when it came to work comp, and he taught me everything he knew. And that was just awesome. It was a great learning experience. I learned how to sell. I learned how to service. I learned how to just really become a technician within that world. And that really springboarded my career into workers' compensation and then into the other lines of insurance that became a lot more interesting to me once I figured out how much they really hold an importance, even though it's not directly protecting families and people within families. If business owners don't have those things, everything can go up in smoke. And if everything goes up in smoke, guess who families suffer? And yeah. I keep using the word family, but it's important. And that's one of my core beliefs. And so I went from there and created my own program for a little while. And then after I created my own program and had some really, really great success, I was approached by what I would consider my current organization, who has probably the most amount invested into their work comp program. And that's Krauss Anderson. They asked me to come in, be the director of their comp troll program, which is a consultative division within the agency. And that's where I am going on 5 years. And so 16 years in the industry, 5 years at KA, and going strong.
I love that you recognized at a young point in the career of what you liked about it and what you didn't. Like, you knew you were drawn to the insurance industry, was raised in it, and knew that was something you wanted to do, but that there were parts of it that you would have been good at. But I talk a lot about, like, unique genius, not only things you're good about, the things that fuel your fire and working in those and recognizing that. And instead of being drained, right, that you recognize, I don't like that, and I don't want to do that part of it, and I'm going to focus on what I like. And when you talk about workman's comp, when I hear you talk about on Dan's show, I mean, you can just hear your enthusiasm and passion and your eyes light up of you are not only really good at it and an expert and can help people because you're so knowledgeable. I mean, help people like no one else can, but I just love your passion when you talk about it.
Well, I appreciate that. And honestly, I don't know if I could do something in my life that I wasn't passionate about. And unfortunately, I know that there's a lot of people in this world that either have to or choose to because of money or, you know, whatever circumstances they're going through. But I've been so fortunate to find something that I am passionate about that I don't know if I could ever go back. And honestly, the only other thing that I could make money doing would be a professional golfer. And I'm not that good at golf. So I hope the work comp thing works out for me because I don't know where else I would turn. You know, I don't really have anything else. I used to be really good at beer pong in my early 20s, but I don't know if there's a career in that. Yeah. I better stick to work comp.
Oh, okay. So we're going to shift a little and talk about courage, still in your career or in life or anything, but tell me about a courageous decision in your journey that you've had to make.
Yeah. It's actually two courageous decisions that lead me to where I am now. And they're both in my career. But the way the insurance world works, it can be very, very advantageous, specifically for salespeople, because we make what's called residual income, right? You build up a book of business, but every year, if you keep your clients and that retention high, the more you make or the more customers you bring on, the more money that you can make and the more favorable it can be for you and your family and so on and so forth. And that's why jumping ship in insurance is not a great thing to do, because you essentially need to start over when you do so. And in that first agency I was at with my mentor, who I still love dearly and talk to almost every single day, it wasn't the right fit for me because the expansion that they wanted to do was a little bit smaller than what I was looking for. I wanted to work with larger businesses. I wanted to get really good at learning all states of work comp. Most people don't know this, but work comp state by state is like languages. It's like English and Spanish and French. I mean, they can be so different. And if you work with a company that's in multiple states and you don't understand those states, you can't really help them. And so we had a difference of opinion. I had a book that was validating my income, meaning I was paying for myself plus more. And it's very uncommon to leave a validated book of business, but I decided to do it for the long-term growth. And I went to another agency. I actually branded, created, and built from the ground up a work comp program that I thought did a great job. And I didn't have enough people supporting me, so it was hard to grow, but I still grew, which meant I was working insane hours and trying to keep up with everything my customers needed. But I validated there. And then I decided when Krauss Anderson came up to me, they said, hey, come on over. I did it again. And to leave two validated books of business to go validate a third time in this industry is almost unheard of. It took a lot of convincing the second time to tell my wife what I was doing and why I was doing it. Because, you know, you take a bit of a step back financially and essentially, yeah. You know, just within your emotions. I mean, it's hard because you're starting over and you still have relationships and you still have opportunities to grow from those relationships. But it was a big deal to do that twice. but I did it because, like I said, it's about the passion. And if I knew that there was a program out there that was willing to put more into the customer and give them everything we're promising to give them, how can I not do it? It would be a bit of a hypocrite to not go work at the place that I knew I'd be able to do the most for all of my customers. And believing in the long-term value strategy that, hey, if I do this the right way, I'll be where I want to be. But that would probably be the most courageous thing that I've had to do in my career.
That is leaving security.
Right.
I mean, twice. Very, you know, in a secure place and comfortable stepping outside of what was comfortable into what was not so comfortable.
Right.
Tell me about a failure, or it doesn't have to necessarily be a failure, but it could be a failure or something, an obstacle that you've had to rebound from.
Yeah, I will. And this will be one that a lot of people can relate to. And I can't call it a failure. It's not a failure. When you're talking about anything regarding mental health, it can't be a failure. But an obstacle is a good word for it. When the pandemic hit, I had been at my new agency, Cross Anderson, for about a year. And things just changed, as they did for everybody across the world, right? I mean, it was just a very, very unique change. I ended up working at home constantly. I was always a remote employee, but obviously I was out on calls 50, 60, 70% of the time, meeting with people, having that interaction. And I feed off of people. It's just who I am. It's how I'm built. You know, I have those days where I can have the most things go wrong in a day ever. But if I'm around people, I'm gaining energy because I'm around people and I'm able to converse and tackle things, right? When I'm by myself, I don't do so well. And I never have. And not that I was by myself during the pandemic. I have a wife. I had a daughter at that time. And we had another daughter during the pandemic. But I didn't get any of that external exposure. And what I did was I sort of chose to ignore it. Right. I said, oh, I'll be fine. This will only last for this long. I can cuddle up in my house and do my work and I'll be all right. And it took a toll. I mean, it really, really did. I felt my energy going down. I felt myself feeling more down. I didn't have the same motivation. And yet I continued to say, I'm strong. I'm successful. I've had this great career. Nothing's going to stop me. I'm good to go. And I wouldn't address it. And with some of the things that have happened in my past life, you would think, how could you possibly do that? But at the end of the day, it's hard to think of yourself as, you know, the wrong word is weak, right? But that's what you're thinking in your brain.
Yes,
it's hard to think that you can't overcome something. And I spent long enough ignoring it that I actually got to a point where I would say I was minimal to zero productivity for a few months. I mean, I couldn't do much. I couldn't really execute. My wife claims I was still a good husband and a good father, but I'm not sure that I was, because I wasn't myself. And that was a challenge for me. I mean, it was a huge obstacle. And it reminded me that, you know, pandemic or not, no matter where you are in your life, no matter how much money you make, no matter what you have going on, at the end of the day, we're all susceptible if we're not paying attention to our true beliefs, to who we are, to what we're internally feeling and what we need, right? I mean, what we need is a big deal. And sometimes we just take what we get, right? And then that's just what we deal with. And that's not enough. You need to know what you need. And for me, it was a hard reality to go, man, you know, I really need these things. And if I don't get them, then I need to do these things to offset it, or I can't be who I am. And that was probably the biggest obstacle I've ever had, because frankly, there wasn't a whole lot in my life that was super challenging. School came relatively easy. Getting a job came relatively easy. Finding success in those jobs came relatively easy. Even when I switched jobs, the success that I had, my first year at KA was one of my best years in my career ever. And then the pandemic hit and I went from absolutely rocking out to, you know, 18 months of eh. And that's a hard thing to go through after you've been doing this as long as I have.
Yeah, it doesn't feel good. Not performing doesn't feel good. Not only the not being with people, but not performing as an achiever doesn't feel good.
Right.
It is, as you said, I think for so long, as a society, we were taught, especially as achievers, that it wasn't okay to say you're not okay. That, you, like you said, you had to keep pretending and say, like, I've got this. I'm a successful person. I'm strong. I'm okay. I got it. If people would ask how you were, if the answer wasn't great, if the answer was good or anything less than that, then it was like you were labeled something like, no, just have a positive attitude. Get through it. Just be happy. I'm strong. I'm successful. And I'm okay. And I don't think it's until even like more recently that the conversation has changed and it's okay and accepted. And we realize the importance of talking about mental health,
right,
and talking about that we're not okay. Like, you were clearly not okay. You know, right, you were in a place of like, you had let yourself, because of that belief that you had to be, you let yourself spiral to a place that really wasn't okay. That could have been, you know, dangerous, because we aren't taught so much to ask for our needs, to have that awareness of all the things that we do really need. And when we're not getting them, to be able to ask for them, to identify what other things can we do. And, you know, sometimes to ask for help or talk it through with someone.
Right. I mean, that's, it's 100% correct. And, you know, I know I shared this with you privately, but, you know, it's interesting because a lot of people that could be listening to the show or watching this show are high performers, and they're people that come from a similar background that I do, of almost expecting success. I mean, really, it's an expectation that you have in your life. But what's interesting is that I did lose my mom to suicide, and it was because of mental health. And this was 7 years ago now. And at the end of the day, most people, and I've had conversations with close friends and family members that would say, I mean, how could you, of all people, knowing what happened with your mom and what she went through, how could you not put this at the top of mind? And the truth of the matter is, people that really find a lot of success in life, that work very, very hard, that stay motivated, that try to stay high, sometimes they can actually be the most vulnerable when it comes to mental health. And it's for all those reasons you just mentioned, Angela. It's because you don't want to believe it could be you, right? Yes, there was someone in my family that had mental health problems, mental health challenges, and essentially it cost them their life. But that was them. It wasn't me, right? And that's what we tell ourselves. And the reality is, that is just not the way that we're built as humans. It's not the way anybody works, and nobody is superhuman. One day or another, every one of us is going to leave this earth. And we all know that is a certainty, and it's a guarantee. And so all you can do when you're here is continue to build and progress as a human, mentally, physically, intellectually. Those are your only options. And so it took me a little while to figure that out. And frankly, I'm very happy with everything that I went through. It wasn't easy. I probably didn't have to go through quite as much pain to get there. But at the end of the day, it was great, because now, whenever I'm not feeling very well, if I'm down or I'm out or there's something going on, I'm like, hey, honey, I want to talk to you about something. I just don't feel great about this. And I want to bounce it off you. And the past Corey would have been like, I'm wonderful. I'm great. I'm feeling well. And to the point where I actually believed it. I just told it wasn't like I was lying to anybody or my wife. I convinced myself it was okay. And that's just not the reality. So I'm happy we're talking about this, Angela, because it's such an important topic, and it literally applies to every person. And if you're watching this and you think it doesn't apply to you, you're the one that actually needs to probably do some, you know, really deep dives into what's going on in your life, because we're all impacted by it to some form or degree.
Absolutely. Thank you for being vulnerable about your story and about your mom too. And that significant loss in your life, but then what you went through. Like I said, it's hard to be vulnerable and say we're there. And, you know, there's a further level than not okay that we get to close to that level. And I say, you know, there are times that your people are tipping towards that and that it just wasn't accepted by society. I think it's becoming more accepted, and I'm happy for that, to talk about mental health and talk about those feelings. Because before, I think if you would have said, I'm not okay, to a point of like, I've thought about suicide, I don't want to live anymore, that's where I'm at, you're put in this like mental health jail.
Right.
And no one would ever think of you the same way again. I I mean, that's how I feel like I was raised. That's how culture was, that if you ever said, I'm just over it. I'm exhausted. I'm done. I can't do this anymore. And that's genuinely what you're feeling. But if you ever shared that with anyone, it was a stigma you'd never be able to run away from.
Right. And that stigma, I mean, it's really interesting. I actually spoke on another panel similar to this. There was multiple people on the panel and the presenter said, hey, I want to go around. We're going to keep positive vibes here. I want everybody to genuinely tell me what the greatest thing to come out of the pandemic was. And most people, I mean, genuinely, it was the work flexibility, the work-life balance, right? They've never been able to work from home. They were able to do it. They could do more with their families. They thought that was great, right? There was a few other responses as far as, you know, overall awareness to health and to, you know, keeping things clean and so on and so forth. And then it got to me and I was like, I have nothing other than 100% of my feeling is that the greatest thing by far, without a doubt, to come from the pandemic is everybody's attention to the stigma around social, around mental health. I mean, it's 100% the greatest thing to come from the pandemic. Don't get me wrong. A lot of people, myself included, suffered from challenges of that mental health, but we all suffer in life. We take beatings and then we get back up, right? And unfortunately, yeah, there's some people that probably took too bad of a beating. And that's really sad. It really is. There's no other word to say other than it's devastating. But as a whole entire society, we grow and we learn from these things. And realistically, you didn't have anybody running seminars and webinars company-wide across the country talking about mental health before the pandemic. And if they did, they were few and far between. Now, if you're not doing that, you're not a good company. That's what people are saying, right? I don't necessarily believe that. I think companies need to decide what they want to do. But at the end of the day, the fact that it's actually being addressed mainly because of the pandemic is a huge W from the pandemic. I mean, if you have to take a positive away, that is it. And it's by a long shot, in my opinion.
I think so too. And it became okay. Not only, you know, things that companies addressed and things that was, you know, coming from the top down, shall we say it, but that it became important in communities, in groups that we're in, right? Like I don't see before pandemic, before this came and I'm glad you pointed out the pandemic because I didn't think of that being the shift of it. But even in groups that, you know, small groups of business owners, I talk a lot about how important it is to find a community, find a circle of people that you really trust. That not only, we talked so much before about, you know, find a group of people, find your people that like inspire you, elevate your mindset, that are big thinkers, and, you know, elevate your life because they're all dreaming big and you're dreaming big, which is important.
Right.
But now the most important part of those to me are that they are now a safe space to be vulnerable. Like it is okay to talk about things like this. It's okay to have a conversation. And I now in these communities have so much different of a relationship. Like we only met recently, but I feel like those of us on Dan's show that, you know, that's a small community of people, you know, successful people trying to be more successful, that the conversation would have only revolved around that instead of this is a place to say life sucks right now.
Right. 100%.
And I need some help getting off this cliff.
You know, I'll actually give Dan Plata credit where it's due. Cause I know I tease him a lot. Cause we go way back to high school. Dan might actually be the one guy that before the pandemic, before some of these shifts and changes, you would have maybe had similar conversations with because he is such an out of the box thinker. I mean, he really is. That the man's an absolute genius and he doesn't give himself enough credit sometimes because he really does think of people first all the time. I mean, it's almost unheard of. And sometimes I envy him for that. That being said, I think you're right because we're talking about majority right now. We're talking about the majority of the way groups and communities and businesses held themselves and the things they talk about. And, you know, we all had different things that exposed us to a unique way to view life or a unique way to approach business. And in my opinion, someone like Dan has always been that unique view. What I'm happy to see is that there's entities or communities or groups or businesses now that never would have done it before that are doing it now. And that is really, I mean, I just can't say enough about how much I appreciate how this has shifted the stigma around all of it. And you can take this any level you want to go, Angela, because it's not just mental health for your employees. It's culture. It's overall everyday work-life balance. There's a lot of things that came out of this that people were like, man, like, wow, it took a pandemic for us to realize that if people aren't happy, they're not going to be productive. Not necessarily just with mental health, but with their everyday duties, with what their job is, with what they have going on. I mean, it's amazing. Like the studies out there, it's like, you know, I read one the other day. This blew my mind. They were able to track productivity of salespeople for like a 6-month period of time. Okay. And then without the salespeople knowing, they put someone, whether it was a spouse, a child, a parent, a coworker, they put someone in the middle of their day for the next 6 months, they would reach out to them and they would just talk to them, whether it was to say, hey, I was thinking about you, or I love you, or whatever the case may be. The second half of every day of the second 6 months was 350% more productive than any other period in time. From no more than a 5-minute conversation in the middle of the day. Right? Because yeah, because it lifts people up when someone you care about calls you and how's it going? I was thinking about just doing this. And some of the people that were in the study were like, I swear I didn't realize that for 6 straight months, I had someone reach out to me at around noon every single day, because that's how good the study was. They did all this. They paid a lot of money. They did all this background. They figured out all the people in their life. And it was, you know, it was like 200 people that were in the study. And it's crazy because you think about that and these people got a phone call and were 350% more productive in the second half of the day for a 6-month period of time. They made more calls. They had more success. It was just crazy. And so, it just speaks volumes to what people need and why it's so crucial we're paying attention now.
It is. And that's a whole nother rabbit hole we could go down of, yeah, those reach outs to people and that personal connection and the importance of that. I have got to take a commercial break. I already told you, we'll see how this commercial break thing works.
Well, I'm excited.
Except, though, you cannot hear the commercial break. They can on the radio, but for some reason you can't on Facebook. And just so you know, I'm not doing it wrong.
All right.
Okay. And we are back. So did you hear it, Corey?
No. Not at all.
It's so weird. I don't know why.
It was dead silent
in between. But I know they hear it on the radio.
Good. There you go.
Okay. So before I go into wherever else I was going to go with this, I haven't heard of that study of salespeople, but one thing I used to talk a lot about and started this during the pandemic when I was working with groups is those intentional reach outs. And I called it, now I forget, but it was a ripple effect. It was something of three. It was on my brain, but we would start.
I know what you're talking about.
I would start each meeting each day with, you just had to reach out to three people. And it was like spreading. I had a name for it. It's not spreading sunshine. It had a good name, I swear.
But spreading sunshine's kind of nice.
Okay.
It sounds nice, you know?
You would just like, that's how we started a daily huddle and weekly meetings, is taking a second because everyone's on Zoom, right? And just taking a second and randomly reaching out. And each day it needed to be three new people. And just sending them a text and saying something that you appreciated about them, or saying something, just reaching out and saying something. And each day it was something new. And I was trying to create a habit in a system that was sticky, and that it affects both people, right? The person that's doing it is like, feels good because they're reaching out and touching three people. And so good things came out of the pandemic like that. Like, we did it during the pandemic because you weren't seeing, people needed that. They needed that connection and love. And that reminded me of that. I haven't done that in a long time. It took my kids a long time to figure it out. But once they did, they're like, are you in a meeting?
Right.
Are you doing the thing?
I love it.
Yeah. I didn't have a person today. You were the actual thing.
You know, it's funny. I'll never forget this, because it was when I was really in kind of a down point. I was trying to come out of it. I was watching a lot of motivational things, right? Things that just made me feel good inside, even though I wasn't feeling great every day of my, you know, every minute of my life. Yeah. And I came across this one, and I've now seen it a few times. I'm sure it's probably actually pretty common. And I don't even know who started it. I don't know who owns it or who should get credit for it. But this guy was giving a motivational speech, right? And he called a woman up on stage and he goes, listen, he goes, if you've ever been a successful person that's now down, right? So you had this success and now you're down. It almost feels like it shouldn't be happening to you, right? Like it's almost this level of privilege that you shouldn't be down. He goes, but let me tell you something. He goes, I'm going to do this for a minute. He goes, I'm going to pull this out of my pocket. And he pulls a $100 bill out of his pocket. Okay. And he looks at the woman. He goes, do you want this? She goes, well, yeah, sure. He goes, all right. He goes, how about now? And he takes it and he folds it in half. And she goes, well, yeah. And he's like, all right, cool, cool. How about now? And he crumples it up. She goes, yeah. And he goes, how about now? He throws it on the ground. He starts stomping on it. And she's like, yeah, I'll still take it. He goes, okay, how about now? And he puts it in a glass of water, pulls it back out. And she said, yeah. He goes, why do you still want it after I did all that stuff to it? She goes, well, it's still $100. He goes, crazy, because in life, no matter what your value is, when you go into something, you're going to get torn up. You're going to get beat up. You're going to get crumpled up. You're going to get kicked on. You're going to get doused in water. It doesn't matter what you go through, yet your value is still the same. You don't feel like it's the same, but it's still the exact same. You don't realize it, but it is. That's why you want this $100 and you're the exact same. So why would you let something that beats you up beat you down, right? You're still the same value you were to begin with. And for whatever reason, when I heard that, I was like, you know, wow, like mind is absolutely blown because it's so true. And I think a lot of that is, you know, a lot of what we go through comes down to like what we're feeling, right? It's just how we're feeling. It's not the truth. It's not the reality. It's just what we think or convince ourselves of. And for me, that was just groundbreaking. So I don't know. I just felt like I had to share it because it was such a crucial part to kind of my journey through some of the things I went through.
I love that. It is like a mind blowing of like, we can see it. We can see the value in that $100 bill, but we can't always see the value in ourselves.
Right.
At different points. One, we can't see the value in ourselves. And then it's an important reminder of letting people know how they're valued as well.
Yep.
So this kind of ties into this.
All
this
right.
Stuff of everything. I like to ask people in leading other people and being a successful person, other people are watching, right? You are going out there doing things, people are watching, and you're a natural leader. And I think that leadership and leading other people, leading by example, begins with leading ourselves well. What does that mean to you? Or do you have things that you intentionally put into place in your life that you do to lead yourself well?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think the biggest thing for me is, it's going to sound a bit negative, but it's not. I think about the things in my life on a day-to-day basis that frustrate me, right? That are usually due to someone else, right? Whether it's my wife and the way we keep our house clean, all the way to my business and something someone may be doing. And I think about the things that frustrate me. And then I think about whether or not I do those things to other people, right? And so, right. So a lot of times what I try to do is, you know, they always say, put yourself in that person's shoes. I literally try to do it literally all the time. Anytime someone's angry, upset, disappointed, frustrated, whether it's at me or somebody else and I'm involved, I literally try to put myself in their shoes. I try to put all my ego and biases aside. And I think to myself, why do they feel this way? Why would you feel this way? And I do it more than I probably should. It's like I'm turning into a psychoanalysis machine, right? Like I literally do it all the time. But it's amazing when you can truly do it and separate yourself from the situation at hand. Really hard to do when you're in a fight with your spouse, by the way. But I still manage to do it. But it's amazing because when you do it, all of a sudden, a sense of calm comes over you and you're like, I understand. Like if you think about it long enough and hard enough, sometimes it doesn't take long at all. You understand why someone feels that. And it could be something completely unrelated to you or the people involved in the process, or it could be something that's directly a result of what you've done or how you've communicated or whatever the case may be. But that's one way that I try to lead myself, because I find myself more often than not specifically related to my early and mid and even late 20s. I almost never get into altercations or confrontations of any kind anymore, mainly because if I put myself in someone else's shoes and I can relate to them, how hard is it to solve a problem when you both understand the issue, right? It's not very hard. It's not very challenging. And even if the issue is yourself, as long as you're willing to understand it and admit that, it's very easy to come up with a resolution to whatever's going on. And so I kind of live my life by that. And at the end of the day, it serves me pretty well. And I think by being able to do those things, it also helps me to potentially lead others, because when someone can see somebody, you know, putting their ego to the side, thinking about why everybody feels the way they do and genuinely grasping that, you know, put yourself in the other person's foot and the other person's shoes, it really allows them to realize that they can do it too, and that there's better ways to solve problems, so on and so forth. And being an extrovert who's massively competitive, that's had a bit of a stutter his entire life, this was a challenge for me, but it's proven to be one of the best daily exercises that I've employed in my life.
Oh, I love so many things about this. So I'm going to go backwards. I love that you just identified all those things about yourself, like being a highly driven extrovert. Like, it is not an easy thing to put our ego aside, right? And you realized that before, like that was me before. Highly driven extrovert, like, let's go. Didn't realize how ego forward I was and not taking a pause to see someone else's perspective and just being like, this is the way it is. So that you recognize that. And that's such a valuable thing of always, like, what is the perspective? Like, we can figure this out if we can share a perspective. So many people don't do that. They do not take the time to listen. They're just like, I'm right, I'm right, I'm right. So many leaders, like, this is the way it is. And I'm not going to pause. I'm not going to have a high stakes, uncomfortable conversation. And in to on purpose gain perspective.
Right.
And that's so important. So I love that you said that, of like, what frustrates other people. Oddly, that's not where I thought you were going to go. When you said that's what I do to frustrate, or like, I look at what frustrates other people. Now, I love the perspective of, I mean, that's so important and everyone should do that. And that's like the most important thing for leaders, is to gain other people's, like, gain a perspective. But I see you as such a problem solver. And I think that's why you love, or I see that in you, of loving Workman's Comp, that I saw when you first said, I love, you know, seeing what frustrates people. I was like, oh, there's the problem solver. And you're like, what problem can I solve? So,
well, it's 100% the exact same thing if you think about it. It really is, right? Because it's problem solving why something isn't going the right way. I mean, yeah. And it's really funny, because I just think back to a week ago. I was having a bit of a frustrating day. Things weren't going right. My wife has been having a lot of frustrating days because her job is pretty crazy right now. And she came home and she asked me a question that at the moment seemed like a very silly question. Okay. And so my response was a bit of an immature response to that question. Okay. Which didn't start things off on the right foot to begin the evening with our 4 and 2 year old in the house. Right. I mean, it was like that tense, we all know that tense feeling, right?
Yeah.
And then finally, after about 5-10 minutes, I was like, okay, USA, you know, like, chill out for a second. And I thought to myself, why is she frustrated? Right. Why is she upset? And this is a funny story, because I was able to sort of work through it. And I was like, okay, she had a frustrating day at work. The reason she asked this question, even though your dumb, dumb brain couldn't figure it out right away, is because of this. There's a good reason she asked you the question. You misinterpreted the question, right? And then you came back to her and were kind of a jerk, right? And so I thought about it. And about 10 minutes after the initial comment, I went up to her and I said, hey, I think I know why all this happened. And she said, oh, why do you think all this happened? And I said, well, I'm a jerk. And she goes, what? And I was like, well, I'm a jerk. And she's like, what do you mean? And I said, well, let me explain to you how I got to this conclusion. And I walked her through everything I thought about. And she goes, your brain works different. And I was like, I know, but I love you and I'm a jerk. And she goes, you are kind of a jerk, but I love you. And it was squashed. And my point is, sometimes we get so caught up in emotion that we're not willing to put that guard down. And this is a simple squabble between a husband and wife, which I'm sure happens more often than not. But at the end of the day, it applies to every single communication and relationship that you have in the entire world. And if you can recognize that and understand it, it allows you to lead the right way. Because like you said, there's so many leaders that do not know how to understand their people, whether it's whether it's people on the same level with them in the organization or people that they're managing. It's just, they miss it. They don't understand it. They're so caught up in the success and being good at what they do, which is what makes them good at what they do. But then they miss out on that other side. And I think there's so many business owners out there that are successful and running a great business, and it's steadily growing and they're finding success, that could be going at the most outrageous path to success if they were able to do this. And to me, it's a massive character flaw in a lot of successful people. And that's why I brought this up as my example.
I love it. And it is a massive character flaw in successful people. And oddly, or maybe not oddly, it is all tied together because it is part of the mental health thing that we were just talking about. As there is more awareness in mental health and people willing to have the conversations and do the work, people are also more willing to recognize, hey, I need to take a step back and I need to let that ego go. Right. And the two go so hand in hand, because if there isn't a safe space to talk about mental health and to talk about what's going on, what you're feeling, then there also isn't a safe space for those people to feel like they can let their ego that's protecting them go and strip that down. Let the ego go. It's still a safe space to understand other people, because they're so, they got all this brokenness inside from the mental health point. So they got all this ego that they're just hanging on to, and they're breaking other people along the way.
Right. 100%. So, couldn't agree more.
It all ties together.
It all ties together. It's amazing how that works in life, isn't it? It really is. It really is.
It is amazing how that works in life. What is something okay, I got to take one more commercial break. Where is time going? Corey, I could talk to you for hours.
Okay. I'm having fun too.
Okay, we'll see if I can take another commercial break and we'll be right back. Yay, and we're back. I still haven't figured out the music on top of those. I still got to do that too.
You got to get Dan to coach you. He's got it down now.
We're getting there.
We're getting there.
Sometimes it's funny when Dan is my guest. He's always like commercial, like today was a little bit of a struggle. And then when he was my guest, I couldn't get my commercial to work. And he just was like, oh, I'll do the commercials. I have the commercials. So teamwork.
Teamwork.
We missed you today. You missed a lot of good stories today on Dan's.
So you want to hear something kind of funny? We have that group chat in order to kind of line up the show.
Yes.
And I read the group chat and Dan said, I can't do it because of blah, 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 LASIK, yada, yada. And then there was a few other texts. I wrote one more text. And then I was like, you know what? I'm focused today. I got to get some things done. So when they came through from that group message, I didn't even read them anymore until 3 or 2:59 or whatever. I see the link come through for the whatever. And I was like, what? And then I scrolled up and I saw like, oh, actually having a show today. And I was like, I didn't even know that. And I was in the middle of something. And so I couldn't join, but it was just crazy because I didn't know that he had re-put on the show after he said he wasn't going to do it.
So that is most people, because he said he wasn't going to do the show. And then there was a lot of banter. I only knew because I was in the air, and because there's people that have non-Apple devices, I got it all. We're on, all of the things once I landed in Vegas. Because I'm here for speaking at Clipicon.
Nice.
And so I was like, okay, we're having a show. But that was, Dave and I do a Collaborate Live, and he's like, no, there's no show today. I was like, actually, there is a show.
Right. Anyway. Dave was on my page then. Yeah. And I saw it, and then I was like, oh, I can't. I have 1 minute to go, and I was doing other things. And...
Well, there was no topic. If you guys are listening to this, you should definitely tune in. When Corey and I are in Dan's show, it is like sports radio, but business talk. And sometimes it's not business talk. Today, somebody was getting a driver's license, and it ended up all driving stories and talking about people being cop stories and me being in the back of a cop car. And that's how it ended up. So,
anyway. Oh boy, that's a story I do want to hear. I'm going to have to go back and watch it.
Moving on to that. Okay, so tell me something you have learned as we wrap up. We are like in our last couple of minutes here. So what, something you have learned in the last year that has changed your perspective or changed your business or changed your life?
You know, I thought about this. It's funny because I can't say that there's something that I specifically learned in the last year that changed my perspective. But I will say this. There are things that I have learned in the last 10 years that gradually have changed my perspective. And we can call that getting older, getting wiser, whatever the case may be. But what I really come down to is this. When I came out of college, I went into a career. I was motivated. I haven't met my wife yet at this point. I was ready to make money and be successful. And I knew all this other stuff would come when it came, right? And the whole time, all I did was think about me, 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 me. I was arguably the most selfish person in the world. I might still be one of the more selfish people in the world when it comes to how my brain works every day, right? And now I do things for my family, but don't get me wrong, I really like it when I get the credit for doing a good job, right? So there's still that positive, I need this for me. And it's interesting because from age 22 to 27, 28, when I met my wife, a lot of it was almost not real, right? Like it was all very real. I had a job and it was a career and it was working towards it, but I'm not sure I really understood what it was for, right? We all hear this all the time and it sounds corny, the meaning of life, right? And nobody knows what we're really talking about, but it started to click, and it started to click in different ways, right? First, I lost my mom. That was awful, tragic, terrible. Anybody that has gone through it or will go through it, nothing you could say, it's terrible, right? But then health scares, right? My in-laws had some health scares. We weren't sure how they were going to turn out. I had a buddy that I knew for a long time that lost an infant after birth, right? Yeah. And you see these things happen, and then you start your family and you have your kids, and your perspective on everything changes. And you're still motivated and you still want to go get things done. But the thing that I've learned, the thing that's changed my perspective over the course of time that's really set in specifically in the last 2 years is this. No matter what you're doing, no matter what your goals are, no matter how hard you need to work to achieve those things, at the end of the day, love, happiness, and family come above it all, no matter what. And I literally mean no matter what. I genuinely can say this. I would rather be full of love, happiness, and family and live in a van under the river and try to scrounge for food for my children, right? Than to be unhappy or to have them be unhappy. Now, I don't actually want to live in a van under the river, down by the river. You know, Chris Farley, I had to put my little piece in there. But at the end of the day, it comes down to making sure you're constantly paying attention to what really matters in your life. And if you do, you will find more success than you ever could find working those 4 extra hours, grinding the pavement, putting yourself through hell, forgetting about your mental health, putting yourself in situations that you don't want to be in or you shouldn't be in. No matter what you do, if you don't live your life around what it is that truly matters, you're never going to get there. And I'm bummed. It took me so long for that to set in. And maybe having kids, maybe that was a part of me getting over that hurdle. Maybe it was the challenges that I went through early on in the pandemic. I'm not quite sure, but what I do know now, and this is the part that really has changed my perspective. When I wake up every morning, I know exactly why I'm happy to be awake. I know exactly why I'm doing what I'm doing. And it's not to go make money, and it's not to be successful, and it's not to get the accolades for being successful. Those things are all great. I love making money. I love getting accolades. Those are great. That is not why. And asking yourself the question, why, for me, that's the biggest perspective you can find. If you can answer that truthfully and you really know what it is and you believe it in your core, in your heart, in your soul, nothing else matters. And you've figured out your perspective. And so for me, it's just about really dialing into who you are. And it's interesting how the majority of our conversations come back to mental health, happiness, those things. Yeah. But at the end of the day, I was talking about how I didn't really perform at work for a year and a half or however long it was that I really hit a downfall. And then I focused on my mental health. I didn't focus on anything I did with work. I just kept doing things the same way I was doing them. I didn't change anything. But once I figured that stuff out, now I'm back to having a record-setting year this year for myself. And so it's just one of those things where perspective in life is so crucial and it's so important. And that's what I've learned.
I love that. And you learned it a lot sooner than I did. A lot sooner than I did. So that's right. Love, happiness, and family. And that's what really matters. So So good. Corey, I could talk to you for hours. So I'm going to have you on again. This was amazing. I love the conversation. So I know all the listeners will. And professionally, yeah, we dove into a lot of the topics, like Corey said, that are really important, that are the most important in your life and are the most important in the success of your business and you really being a good human being as well. But Corey is the expert in orphans comp. And so all you Chirps Up people, that's a hot topic. And you should definitely reach out to Corey because he blows my mind in his knowledge of it and his passion. And so that's your shout out. But I am like, I don't have that in my company because my people are all in the Philippines. I don't even have that. But I'm like, oh, Corey.
That's good stuff.
And it is so important and from a totally different level. So thank you so much for being here with me today. Like I said, we'll have to do this again. And this was an important conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. I really think it is. Yeah. Yeah. I'm really happy. I'm happy we're able to talk about it. And many times when I get on this, I'm supposed to get into the details and specifics of work comp. And those are important too. But at the end of the day, especially for our first time together, I'm happy that we were able to talk about the things that, in my opinion, really matter. Right. Because not everybody cares about work comp. Not everybody uses work comp. Not everybody cares about, you know, how you fix an experience mod. But I hope most people care about people's intellectual view on what life is, why it matters, how we find happiness, what to do if you're not happy. And Angela, I loved a lot of the things that you said too, because they're spot on. And at the end of the day, if there's a takeaway message from this entire show that we've done today, it's this. Figure out who you are and what makes you happy. And if you don't know and you can't answer that question, then ask someone you love for help. That's it. Done. Yeah. I guarantee you they'll give you help. I promise you they're going to give you help. And I promise that they're going to help you find your way. And the last thing I'll promise is that once you do all of those things, everything you're striving for in your career, in your professional, your business, whatever it may be, will fall into place. I guarantee it 100%. Done.
Absolutely. Ah, you couldn't have signed off any better.
I love it.
Thank you guys for listening. We'll see you next week.